Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with me, Scott Waldman, doing an interview actually right now in a dark room. The radio room at Adobe is dark, and I put on the AC, but I figured I'd try to do something different. So this is the very first interview with the lights out, and I believe someone is actually fixing that outside the office as we speak, which is pretty cool. But you know what? I'm enjoying this right now. And before we get into Taylor, I just want to give my buddy Dave Prince, groomsman at my wedding, one of my best friends in the world, guy who often shares the stage with me with Lido Beach. Also, fun fact, was in my very first band that gigged We Are Groove Animals. He's the man. He performs in Taylor and the Apes, and we're actually talking to the lead ape today, Taylor Anspaugh. And you can almost spell apes with his last name. There's no E, but we could still be friends. So I'm looking forward to learning about Taylor's journey to New York City and how he balances however he earns income with Taylor and the Apes, a really, really cool rock and roll band, emphasis on rock and roll, which is a rare form these days with, you know, a lot of the SoundCloud rap that probably in a day or two won't be as popular. So I'm actually flying to New York on Monday, but by the time this episode airs, I'll be long back. So right when I get back from New York, I have a few other interviews scheduled, and then, holy shit, it's 2019. I think this episode will be airing in mid to late December, so Hanukkah will just be ending, because on the Jewish calendar, there's 14 months. So that's why it changes every year. Fun fact, kids. And Christmas will just be beginning. So if you're listening to this episode, maybe you can get the new Taylor and the Apes LP for all your friends for Christmas or for Kwanzaa or for whatever holiday you choose to celebrate or not celebrate. Festivus is a big one too. I'm just really excited to have the lead ape here. Again, want to give a special shout out to my boy, Dave Prince. Just really, really a huge fan of that kid. And we will do our best to learn, talk, probably talk a little bit about Tom Petty, because I hear that influence a lot with the Apes, and talk about how cool Brooklyn got as soon as Scott Waldman fled the East Coast for, I wouldn't even say greener pastures, because you can't water certain like gardens or greenery out here because of the drought. So I'd say more temperate pastures. So stick around for this wonderful episode of Waldman's Words. Typically, again, I didn't say this now, but I said this last show and pretty much every other show. A lot of the people that we interview are more behind-the-scenes people, but I couldn't resist doing this one. So hopefully you'll enjoy it, and peace out. All right, well, I hope you all enjoyed those commercials, those songs, or whatever Adobe chose to play. We've got Taylor, and a running theme that I have is that I butcher someone's last name. It's not as easily pronounceable as Smith or Prince, for that matter, or even Friedman. But is it Anspaugh?
It is Anspaugh, yes. I usually go by Elliot, one of my middle names, just for that very reason. But I've been going back to Anspaugh lately. You know, I'm doing the whole John Mellencamp, John Cougar, John Mellencamp thing, so.
Well, how many middle names do you have? I mean, you just said one of your middle names, so you just aroused my curiosity.
No, I'm just joking. It's okay. Just, yeah.
Scott Lewis, David Howard, Prince Waldman. That's me. And
That's your whole, say that again?
Scott Lewis, David Howard, Prince Waldman.
That's insane.
Well, there's that's awesome. Thank you. You've been very supportive throughout this entire one-minute broadcast so far of your interview, so Taylor, I don't know too much about you, but I do mostly interview people behind the scenes. But I said this in the intro, and I've been saying this the past few weeks. Dave Prince is one of my favorite people on the planet, and I think this could be a really interesting show because your band, you know, you're a great band, very tight musically.
Oh, thank
but
you.
It's not. Oh, you're welcome, of course. But it's not how you earn your living. So I want to, I guess, learn about what it's like being in the second most expensive city in America. LA is actually number three. And how you balance that, but let's talk way back in the day. I assume that you were reared on classic rock, but I could be wrong. Where are you from? What got you into music, and what's your astrological sign?
Oh, astrological sign. I'm from, I was born and raised in Indiana.
Like John Cougar. Yeah.
Hence why the call back there, John Cougar Mellencamp territory. you know, we had a cornfield in the backyard. Walmart was pretty much the club to go to on Saturday nights.
Shit. Yeah.
you know, I moved to the city about, in 2012. After
Let's
college.
Talk way before that though. So you
way
obviously
before
were,
that. Got you. Okay.
You were hanging out at Club Walmart.
I was 3 years old, got my first little plastic guitar, and I was obsessed with Billy Ray Cyrus, particularly his like only song, Achy Breaky Heart.
How dare you say that that's his only song? How dare you? I'm gonna Google Billy Ray right now. I mean, he was also really great on Hannah Montana, but I want to Google right now if he's had any other hits. But continue, because I mean, you were the one who hung out at Club Walmart, not me. So I'm curious.
You know, hey, it was VIP. So I, from a really early age, I was. My parents always said I was like a showman. You know, I was always looking for attention. I would sing that song over and over again while just mindlessly strumming this guitar. And then when I was like, 10 or 11, you know, I got into skateboarding because I thought that would be really cool. And I noticed a lot of skaters were like listening to like, you know, rock and roll and stuff. And it's not something I'd, you know, I mean, I was 10, everyone else was listening to the Backstreet Boys, so like that's kind of what I was just doing. I didn't take much thought in anything else. And then
was the skating scene out in Indiana larger than life?
On our cul-de-sac it was, yes. I got three other of our neighborhood boys involved in it, and so we would all be outside doing our little 1-inch ollies and trying to do a pop shove it.
I asked you to keep this PG and you're talking about your 1-inch ollie. Can you please do me a favor and modify how you talk? 1-inch ollie, that's vulgar.
I'm just being honest.
I'm just being Miley.
Yeah.
By the way, Billy Ray Cyrus, I'm looking at it right now. He's had 8 top 10 singles, and I don't think 7 of them are like abridged versions of Achy Breaky Heart. So you, sir, how dare you besmirch okay. William Ray Cyrus.
Okay, well, I haven't followed him since about 94, so that's,
most people
that's
probably
me,
agree with
so.
You, but the thing is that Achy Breaky Heart, that is a song that no matter what I do, whenever I go to a karaoke bar, I hear someone do California Love, Bust a Move, and Achy Breaky Heart. So there you go.
Yeah. Hey, one of the top 3, so
of all time.
It's a catchy song.
Undeniable. Anyway, back to you. And half pipes on the 1-inch ollie.
Oh, yeah. So I never got to half pipe level.
Boo.
But so one day I'm like looking for music to listen to because all these other skaters I see like on TV and stuff, like they're listening to, you know, this guitar driven music and everything. And so I go through my dad's cassettes and I find Aerosmith's Greatest Hits. And I don't know why I picked that one. I think like that was like, I was just telling my dad like, oh, I want to listen to some of your old, you know, cassettes. And he was like, awesome. He was like, that's great. Anything to get you out of the Backstreet Boys. So I put on, I took, you know, the boombox outside and put it on. And I think Mama Kin is the first song that comes on there. And Better Dream On. And like it was just like earth shattering. I was like, what is this, you know? And then I got just, I would play that cassette on repeat over and over, and I just gradually moved. Like I would still have it outside, you know, like, and I'd have the skateboard there, but like I would just start listening instead of actually skateboarding.
How old were you, by the way? Just give me a frame of reference.
Yeah, I was like 11 at this point.
That's a good time to get into music. I mean, what's crazy is I was talking about this the other day. Dream On, Steven Tyler sounds like a different human on that recording than he does on the rest of it. Do you know why, or is it because like he was new to the studio?
I do You know why.
Ooh, why?
Because, well, supposedly he says that's the only song on the album where he sings like himself. But if you listen to that whole first album, he sounds terrible. And it's because he went back and re-recorded the lead vocals to try to sound more soulful, a.k.a. like a black man. Like, that was where I read somewhere. And the band was so pissed at him. They're like, why didn't you sing like yourself? And he was like, oh, I thought this would be better. And so that's why he does the whole, like, you know, on, like, that song, was it, One Way Street? He's like, oh, that's what I'm talking about, mama. Like, just
affected.
So bad.
Like, more affected vocals, would you say, or, like?
Yeah, like, he's trying to be someone he's not. And so a lot of that album is, like, it's kind of cringeworthy. There's a few good songs that I love, like Mama Kin's one that's fantastic, Moving Out. But, yeah, and it wasn't until the second album when he actually sounds like himself, because they were like, no, just sing like yourself. Don't try to be someone else.
Right. Well, whatever it did, it worked. And what's funny is what got you into Aerosmith was not what got me into it. I actually believe I purchased Big Ones, which I think at that point was like Greatest Hits Volume 3. And
yeah,
that was when like...
93.
Yeah, exactly. And...
Yeah,
you get a grip head like what, like five hits on it, and it just—that's when I was like, "Holy shit!" I mean, this is definitely the definition of like a comeback story. But what else? So that's what got you into music. But did that get you into writing songs or playing instruments, or is that kind of just what ignited your fire?
That ignited it, and then soon after that, one of my friends broke his arm on his skateboard.
On a two-inch ollie.
No, he was trying to do, I think, a kickflip. None of us ever accomplished that. But he kind of put an end to all that. He broke his arm, and then we were just like, oh, crap. So then I decided I wanted to get a guitar. And so I begged my parents, and I got a nice little cheap, I think it was a JBP electric for Christmas.
I don't like it when people get, like, Les Pauls for their first guitar, because they're going to just fuck it up anyway.
You can't do that. You know, you don't deserve it.
Nope,
you know?
You don't.
You got to earn that.
I agree.
I still don't have a Les Paul.
So. Well, you don't deserve it. So pretty soon, maybe you will. But no, all kidding aside, it's a really good way to get someone to not give a shit. Like, this is actually a pivotal point, but I remember when CD burning was popular, you don't appreciate the album as much, just like with streaming technology. Like, you give up on a song potentially within a few seconds. I digress. So back to you.
Yeah, but I'm so pro album. Anyways, I got a guitar, and then and from Aerosmith, I graduate to AC/DC, and so I'm learning all these AC/DC songs and the Aerosmith songs, and this gets me through till
with
I'm about
lessons
15.
or by yourself. Were you taking lessons, or how did you learn those songs?
I took lessons for like 2 weeks, and I kind of like he was a great guy. His name was Mr. Eddington, and he owned Old Man's Eddington Shop, you know, kind of thing, like a music store in my hometown. And he taught me for about a couple weeks, and he showed me how to read tabs, and then, like, he would kind of get on to me because my brother decided he'd take lessons too. And he'd be trying to show my brother something, and I'd be like just noodling, you know, around. He'd be like, oh, no, hang on. I got to teach him. I'm like, well, but I want to play. So I quit the lessons once I learned how to read tabs. And then, you know, at this point, I'm 12 or 13 or whatever. And so from there, I just taught myself. So I would. And then also just by listening to albums, you know, I try to figure out how to play from there.
I still
think
that's the best way to learn, is to teach yourself how to do it. So,
yeah, because you know, it's not like being in like band class or something like that, where like it becomes kind of this educational thing. It's more of a discovery thing. I think it's more it holds your attention more because you're doing it yourself, and everyone learns kind of a different way.
Well, your ear training skills,
your style,
your
ear training, and learning by ear. It's because then you train your ears to like hear things. You know, it's like learning to drink wine, you know, or something like that. You know, you learn, I guess you get a more diverse palette of ear sounds. I don't know.
I'll just extend on this. Like, I think it's great to start with a teacher or to stay with a teacher as long as possible because, you know, they can really, really be objective about it. And I'm not faulting that, but I think on your own, as much as possible, to become a better songwriter, better musician, better anything, listen to songs and try to figure out the chords, try to figure out the vocal melodies, try to figure out harmonies, try to figure out bass lines. It's only going to make you that much more proficient of a musician.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's funny because when I was saying like how you kind of learn on your own way, I still play a D chord different than everyone else somehow. Like,
why are you such a D, dude? You're such a D. I said you're such a D. It's messed up.
I'm a D when it comes to the D.
Yeah. I'm a D with the G string.
Ooh.
Ooh.
But in terms of like learning harmonies, I learned a lot about harmonies from Tom Petty.
I talked about him in the intro, by the way. I knew you were going to bring him up.
Did you really?
Yeah.
As I'm wearing a Tom Petty sweatshirt right now.
No, you're not. Really?
I swear, yeah.
You got to send me a picture of that over text. Otherwise, I do not believe you. Yeah.
It's from the last DJ tour, actually, in 2002. So, but yeah, I discovered Petty when I was, I think, 16, and I suddenly was like, oh, these are songs, you know, so like, and just the harmonies he would do, especially with Howie Epstein later on, and Stan Lynch were just phenomenal. Like, I couldn't get over them, and then I'd find myself driving my car in high school. And I'd be singing along to Tom Petty, but I'm not singing Tom's parts. I'm singing the harmonies.
It's a very Beatles thing, right?
And I still think to this day, like when I sing along to Tom Petty, I'm singing the harmonies because they're just beautiful. They're angelic. I'm like, oh, God.
They could be songs themselves. I mean, that's what you – the Beatles, I'd say, taught me more about harmony than music theory. But yeah. Anyway, so were you playing in any bands at the time or were you just writing songs on your own?
Well, I – started writing on my own and everything soon after that. I got into like Oasis was another big band I was into, and so I started trying to write songs like Oasis, you know, which, and they were just rip off songs of the Beatles, so I was kind of like writing third rate Beatles songs.
I mean, dude, who can write a first rate Beatles song? Like, I mean, come on, that's pretty difficult. Don't be so hard on yourself.
Yeah, okay, so
you're welcome.
Thanks. Bring me. Yeah. then I had a girlfriend, my first girlfriend. I recorded a little, like a few songs for her that were just god awful, but you know, young love, oh, it does things to you. And her mom like listened to it when she, you know, just in passing or whatever, and she was like, "Oh, is that Taylor? He sounds like Bob Dylan." And so my girlfriend, she tells me later, she's like, yeah, my mom heard it. And she was like, she says you sound like some guy named Bob Dylan. And me being the 17 or whatever year old narcissist I was like, oh, well, I sound like Bob Dylan. I better check this guy out.
Robert Zimmerman.
Robert Zimmerman. And he was another he changed everything for me in terms of how to write a song, as he's done with so many people. That's when I really started taking songwriting seriously. I fell head over heels for his writing. So then I formed a band with some friends in high school. We were called the Bicycle Shop Hostages.
Okay.
And I played a few gigs, you know, and I was the lead guitarist and the songwriter. And you know, then we all went to college and that ended. And
where'd you go?
I went to Ball State, Ball State University, so where David Letterman went.
So there's actually Dave Prince messes with me about because he's not into it, by a very talented guy named Chase Hughlin. But I'm going to actually Google a line, which Dave will probably laugh when he hears this. But he says, I don't want to go to Ball State University unless I fucking have to. That's the line. Thank you. It's from the song Niagara.
Well, The joke is with Ball State is you go to Ball State if you don't get into Purdue or Indiana University.
Okay.
I went, though, for a very, very specific reason. I went because it was the best school for audio and visual like telecommunications.
I went to a school in the Midwest myself. I'm from the East Coast, as you know from Dave, but I went to the University of Michigan. And they were kind of like the opposite of Ball State and thinking that their shit didn't stink. So there were shirts that they sold that said Harvard, the Michigan of the East. And I always thought that that was really freaking annoying. But anyway, and it's so not true. But anyway, it's, I mean, it's a great school.
I have friends who went to University of Michigan and they all turned out like that. Like, they were cool before they went. And then like during school there, they were just like their shit didn't stink. And I'm like, who are you?
Exactly. It's so annoying. I mean, I don't want to rant about that. I loved Michigan, but a lot of the people that went there really thought that they were like Bon Jovi. Anyway, I'm done. So so back to the balls and the states.
Yes, or as we called it, testicle tech sometimes.
Ooh. You studied urology at Ball State. It's a great school for that.
But no, I didn't enjoy the first couple years. I got very depressed, and I switched to acoustic guitar because you can't really play electric in the dorms. And plus, by then, I was really into Dylan, so I was learning a lot about chords and chord structure. I got into Elliott Smith.
Oh, now you're talking. Which, admittedly, I'm not a huge Dylan fan. I think he should just stick to poetry. But, oh my God, Elliott Smith. That dude's a beast. And I don't know, have you ever listened to the band Super Drag?
The band Super Drag? I've not.
Okay, well, after this call, after you send me the picture of you wearing that petty thing, I will send you an album to listen by Super Drag. But anyway, Elliott Smith, so you like the tortured, tormented, melodic man.
Yeah, and what he did with lyrics, too, was, like some of his songs just, I mean, pretty much everything on, I mean, Figure Eight is a masterpiece. It's like a Beatles album.
I have that on vinyl. That's the one I have. That's the album I have on vinyl.
Ah, I wish I had it on vinyl.
If you put your mind to it, you can get it. I'm just letting you know that.
Just a vinyl check, you know?
Yep.
I love every single album of his, from Roman Candle to even From a Basement on the Hill. I mean, the last song on From a Basement, A Distorted Reality, is now a necessity to be free. Like, oh, God, that song. Oh, that opening riff is just insane. It's so catchy.
He's amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, so I started doing that stuff, but that's when I really started focusing even more on lyrics, and that's when I kind of progressed a lot more. You know, I started taking creative writing classes and reading more, something that I had never done in high school, which I'm ashamed of.
There's always time.
I do read.
There's
a lot
always
more
time
now.
To read. I mean, people that just don't like reading assigned literature, and if the books in high school, the fiction books especially, were better, then maybe more people would be inspired.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's, you know, a good point. And the stuff I learned I read in college was a lot more in tune with.
Good word, in tune.
Yes, with what I was wanting to. I don't know. It spoke more to me, I guess. I don't know where was I going at?
You were just talking about literature, and we're actually gonna. This is a good place to cut off and take a break before we get into the segment where you graduate school or you don't, and you move to the East Coast.
Cliffhanger.
But, yeah. Well, it's a cliffhanger that I don't even know. But I guess if you could say one adjective to describe the previous 20-something minutes of your life, I would love to hear it.
Adjective. Curious. That's not an adjective.
An incorrect adjective will do, like the color yellow.
Okay.
No. You could do better than that.
Yeah.
Dave Principle? Like, whatever you want to say, Dave Principle.
Dave Principle, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with Taylor and Spa, whose name I actually said correctly, so I'm proud of myself. And we'll get into the changes. Stick around.
Ooh.
All right, we are back with Robert Zimmerman. Welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be here, man.
Seeing him. So, yeah, like the Sterling Pavarotti vocalist. Anyway, so you are in school. Did you end up graduating, or did you just say, F this ball?
Well, I wanted to, real bad. I told my folks I was going to move to New York. I was really depressed. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And then I discovered this program to go to London, and I'd never been out of the country, let alone to a big city. And there, I was like, okay, how's this? If you agree that, you know, it's okay that I can go to London for a semester, I'll shut up and I'll stay in school. And so I did, and then I went there. That changed everything, too, and suddenly I wanted to move to a city even more. Became a lot more of who I am, as you do in college, going through these things. And then I graduated.
But what did you do in London? Like, what was different about London? Is it just the appeal of living there, or were there, like, different programs and classes?
The classes were kind of a joke. It was mostly just being independent, you know. And, you know, when you had... just going to enjoying city life, you know, like we'd discover music venues and bars and other musicians and alcohol and everything else. And it was just this kind of liberating thing where, you know, we didn't have cell phones really. Like, or some people, like, you know, bought cell phones there that they could use, but I didn't have a cell phone.
And oh my God. You had no dog leash. That's amazing.
Yeah. It was this whole thing. And then London is just an incredible town. I know I've romanticized it since, because I haven't been back there. I'd love to go again and see how it is now, you know, how it
might be on tour with the Apes.
Yeah. Well, that's be ideal sometime. It just opened my eyes to a lot of things, I guess. So I decided I was going to move to New York, because I couldn't move to London, because that was going to be really difficult. So New York seemed like the next best thing. And I worked over the summer after college at my high school job, which is a movie theater, and just saved up, lived with my folks. And in September, the end of September, I had $3,000. I bought a one-way bus ticket, booked an Airbnb for 3 weeks, and said adios. And
what year was this?
2012.
Okay.
So I was, and yeah, I had the guitar and everything in a very kind of a cliched way. Because I didn't have a job. I didn't know nobody here.
Sounds like a song. Took a bus, right? Didn't have a job, didn't know nobody. That sounds like a fucking song.
Yeah. Well, and like, I'd visited New York twice before, but I'd never gone above like 59th Street, you know, and now I'm like living on 184th. So I was, you know, it was kind of nerve wracking getting off the bus at Port Authority, and you're like, oh, I'm here. I have like nothing. What's going, you know, not knowing what's going to happen.
But why New York of all places?
Oh, because, you know, well, one was Dylan. And two was, I didn't need a car.
Okay.
You know, I thought about LA and stuff, but economically, I mean, I can drive, you know, I'm in Indiana, you have to drive. But, economically speaking, New York was a safer bet, I guess. And, I like the idea of the village, the Lower East Side, you know, the big tall buildings and the narrow streets. And also it fits more in my mood. I guess LA is more.
Oh, I'm not saying why. Well, I'm not saying F off. Why not LA? I'm just like,
yeah,
because you could have moved anywhere. But I mean, LA, New York, and Nashville happen to be the hubs. But you know.
Yeah, I guess I like busy. I like staying busy, and I like the whole mentality of New York a lot better. It fits more in with who I am, I think. And of course, when I moved here, I felt right at home. I was like, oh, it was like a breath of fresh air. I was like, okay.
A fresh air in New York City? That's an oxymoron.
Right? But, so that, and then I got very lucky in terms of, like, the person I was staying with, who had also just moved to New York, we became friends, and both hit the streets. We both found jobs and then moved into a place together. Then I got into open mics and stuff and met the first member of the Apes about a year later, Rob Morrison, who's one of my closest friends.
He was just doing the same thing you were doing, just performing an open mic night?
Yeah, just open mics, you know, and I worked at this bar in the Lower East Side and that had music, and I would just beg the guy, you know, beg the booker to let me play, and finally he's like, okay, fine, come in next Monday at 5 o'clock. It'll be a happy hour crowd. And I was like, yes, thank you, you know, and I told everyone, and of course no one showed, but it was like a decent crowd, you know, it wasn't packed, but like happy hour people, and four songs in, the bar was empty. So that was no coincidence, because you're four songs in. And
that's not exactly prime time for a rock show, but it
was
what it was.
Yeah, well, it's just me, you know, and I was doing my folk shit, and, you know, even the bartender was like, he stopped, and he was like, he went outside for a cigarette and just was laughing, and I'm like, oh, God. But he thought I was, you know, charming enough, I guess, so he brought me back, you know, and then I slowly built up some skin, and finally, like, a couple people were there, you know, and didn't leave. And I learned, you know, hey, a white Midwestern boy, 23 years old, should not try to sound like an old black man from, you know, the Delta Blues times. You know, I went through the whole Steven Tyler thing where I was like, you know, stop trying to be someone you're not, and that you know, and be yourself. And
was this your first time singing lead, though? Because you said in your high school band, you know, the bike shop,
bicycle shop hostages.
Damn right, I'm fucking scared to buy a bike now. But you were the lead guitarist. Was this the very first time that you were doing this? Because, you know, it takes a lot.
Yeah, it was the first time I'd gone full on with it. And I don't know, I was scared for years to sing live, you know, and it took me a long time, and then finally it just came out of me one night. I was just playing an open mic, and I just sung this different way, and a friend of mine who was there was like, wow, you've never sung that way before. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool. And it felt more natural, and then I just evolved from there with more confidence, and you know, I still have, even now I have a voice that's not conventional. You know, it's definitely more character than
it's not for everyone, but it's polarizing, and like, I mean, in the way that like a Tom Waits, like they're the people that love it are gonna love it, and then there's some people that are just gonna be like, it's not for me. But it definitely stands out. That's my honest assessment.
And I'm okay with that. And I agree totally. You know, I'm still evolving with it. Over the summer, I got really into Dion on the Belmonts, and that's already affected my singing. I would love to sound like Dion one day, you know, like, which is like, so did Lou Reed. Lou Reed wanted to sound like Dion, and he was never going to, but
he's a Long Island boy. You know that?
Yeah. He's a what?
Oh, he's a Long Island boy.
Yeah.
Lou Reed, and what's crazy is that he was a part of that time, which is a really, really, really scary time. But since he had, you know, homosexual tendencies, or he acted out on them, his parents actually gave him electroshock therapy. That's how they were treated back then.
So they did, stuff. And that affected him for a long time. Like, his relationship with his parents was never the same.
Can only imagine.
And, anyways, going back to me and everything, because it's all about me.
It's a narcissism hour. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
So fuck Waldman. Fuck his words. It's all about you.
Your words.
Yeah, my words are stupid.
But anyway, so then I met some other people. We formed a little band in 2014. And it was the Taylor Elliott Band. And
well, you're gradually making it less narcissistic, because you're Taylor Elliott Band, and now you're Taylor and the Apes. So you're just taking one word away. Your next project, your side project, is going to just be the letter T.
Exactly. Well, we're going to go to the Tatas, and then and then we'll be T.
I asked you to keep this PG, and now you're talking about Tatas and balls. You're just trying to like talk about every single region. This is messed
up. Sorry.
It's okay.
I'm from Indiana. We're
not civilized folk. I don't know why it is Southern accent.
We're not PC.
We're not PC. We're BC. We believe in that. Anyway, sorry.
That's great.
Thank you. Once in a while, this is why I have a show. It's all about these cheeky one-liners.
Oh, that's why I would have a show.
Way to make it narcissism again about you. I was talking about me, Taylor. Anyway.
Oh,
God damn it.
So, we started playing out and everything, and then I had to learn, which I'm still in the process of learning, how to be a leader and a boss. You know, I've had to fire people and hire others, and you know, you realize you can't necessarily hire someone for this reason or that, and it's been a long process of trying to find the right group of guys. And about a year ago, I finally got the guys I want. I have it's Rob Morrison still, God bless him. He's like pretty much has tenure now. He's on keys. We got Josh Salance on drums.
Studio technician.
David, what was that?
Studio technician.
Video technician.
Everything. He's just the guy. He knows a lot about some gear.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because he runs his own studio.
See, that's why I said it.
In Brooklyn. And, you know, with my old band, we actually did our first EP at his studio, and that's how we met.
There you go.
And, so, yeah, and then we have our boy David Prince on bass, and then Izzy Friedman on guitar, who I always call
he's
my
a beast.
Howie Epstein.
Yeah, he's a beast. He's so good.
Yeah, and he sings like a soprano, you know, and he's like, he's
like
what
Tony
I've always
Soprano?
And,
or and, like an and, operatic soprano?
Yeah, like his voice is insane. And, you know, him and I have been writing a lot together lately, and he's his idea of arranging. Sorry, my phone keeps vibrating.
So, hey, you're blowing up because you're on the
show. I know, right? But, and so finally I have these group of guys that I adore, and we're all really good friends. I consider them my best friends, really. And we did an album last year called American Living.
Yep, without a G.
With what?
Without a G.
Yes, without a G. It was a very controversial decision.
Yeah, I know. All the G's got upset. All the gangsters were really pissed at you, and it escalated in a turf war. So I guess I just want to speak to you quickly about New York Living, because this show is primarily for people behind the scenes, but I want to know how you balance playing in the band and all your expenses and how you, you know, you pay your bills. I really would like to hear about that.
Well, I work. I mean, I'm currently on my like 15th, 16th day in a row of work. So it's hard. I have 2.5 jobs, kind of. And like I'm a company manager at an off-Broadway theater, and then I work at a music venue, and then occasionally I run sound for bands. So it is challenging. You know, I mean, I live in the Bronx, so rent isn't that bad. But it's, you know, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. You know, it keeps me busy, and sometimes I get burnt out. Currently, I'm experiencing a level of being severely burnt out. Like I said, I haven't had a day off since before Halloween.
Yeah, that's technically insane, dude. Holy shit.
Yeah. And then on top of that, you know, I discovered last week that I have vocal nodules.
Wow.
So I have to have vocal therapy. So the band actually has to – I can't sing for a couple months. So we're focusing on, you know, we have a single coming out next month. We just did a music video. Our EP comes out, a new EP comes out in January.
The Tim O'Sullivan, the live recording?
Yes, we did with Tim O'Sullivan, thanks to you.
Yeah, no, I don't even work with him anymore, but he's a really good guy, and he's very talented.
Yeah, we clicked instantly when we met. Like, it was like, this guy. So
good.
And we're really happy with the EP, and we went on tour over the summer. You know, we did Philly, DC a couple times, Maryland, Montreal, Vermont. We're going to go on tour again, it looks like, in March.
Rest your voice first. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I know. Let's wait. We don't have any gigs booked until at least the end of January.
Okay, good.
And so we're just going to lay low. I'm going to write, and we're just going to release, you know, things from here on till then to keep us relevant. But things, you know, other than that, things are going really well. These nodes have got me a little worried. I'm glad I caught them early.
Yeah, and if you hadn't, it could have been catastrophic. So I guess we don't have too much time left. So what advice would you give for a young kid doing, you know, an inch ollie in a suburb of Indianapolis that wants to do what you're doing?
Work hard at, you know, and learn, and the music you listen to, go back to what they're listening to. Don't have an open mind. I mean,
don't have an open. Yeah, that's the best advice I've ever gotten on this show. Just so you know,
very close-minded.
Do not have an open mind. Harass people.
Have an open mind about your musical journey that you're on, if you can call it that. You know, like whatever you listen to. Like I said, go back to what they're listening to. Learn as much as you can. Because especially in today's age where people are so focused on looks and style, I'm not saying that isn't important, but it means shit if you're not good at what you do. And also, more importantly, just have fun with it. Because if you're not having fun, then
what's the point?
Shit? Yeah, like it's. And I always told the guys, I was like, look, when this isn't fun anymore, then we'll call it quits. But let's have fun, you know.
You can make a lot more money as an iBanker or as, you know, something in finance or law or medicine. Don't do this if you don't want to.
Exactly. And, you know, people have been telling me, they're like, you know, wow, you're working a lot lately. At least you're getting a lot of money. And I was like, yeah, but at what cost? You know, is it worth my sanity and getting burnt out and losing my focus? You know, it happens to me all the time. I got to, like, restructure my perspective and have a gratuity check, and it's a constant struggle. But I, you know, the band, as long as I tell myself, is if the band progresses, you know, by every December I do like an assessment. I'm like, if we're further along than we were the previous December, then we're doing well.
You're like the guy in Office Space who like interviews the people to keep their job. But I can just tell you that I've spoken with Dave about your project a number of times. And it seems like things are really moving. You're actively playing. I mean, you're actively taking time off, which is important. But your numbers are going up on certain mediums like Spotify. And I mean, my sister saw you live, and she dug it.
Our album release show we had in May, and we played at Rockwood Music Hall, which, you know, it holds about 70-some people, but we had the place at capacity. And there was a line out the door, too. So that was big for us. I was like, oh, my God. This many people actually came out.
And they could do anything now. I mean, especially now with stuff like Netflix, Amazon, you know, people don't even like to leave the house anymore. So just getting them out and about to see, you know, a not quote unquote cool genre of music, that says a lot.
Yeah, well, I tell the guys, you know, we really try to focus on our live shows. You know, we do the energy, make sure it's an event. I was like, we're up against a lot. There's a lot of choices people have.
In New York City.
Make sure they want to come to us, you know, and people, the one thing they always say is they love our live shows, and which is the best compliment I think we can get, so.
Yep. Anyone can sound good in the studio, but to sound good live, sans backing track, you have to have the chops.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't have the chops, then get chopped salad. What can I say?
That's honestly the next to the advice you gave about just being a horrible person. That, I think, is like just the best way to end this segment. So, Taylor, if you could give the tens of gazillions of people listening the ways to check out Taylor and the Apes or your socials or what have you, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, you know, we're on Spotify and all those things, iTunes and stuff. We're on Facebook at just Taylor and the Apes. Our Instagram is at Taylor and the Apes, all one word, run on. We have a website, guess it, taylorandtheapes.com. Just stay tuned because, like I said, our single comes out next month, and we're really happy with it. It's called That's Just Rock and Roll, and it sounds different than what we've released in the past. And the EP is going to, you know, it's gonna turn some heads. I think people are really gonna like it. So just
especially
keep
the harmonies.
That and
especially the harmonies. That's it's funny because you spoke about this, and this is a good way to bookend it. But I had the privilege of hearing their newer batch of material, and I can tell you that the harmonies sound lush. And if you're a fan of classic rock and you want a new form of it, check out the new upcoming Teller and the Apes material and dive into American Livin' sans the G. So thank you so very much, Taylor, for doing this every single Tuesday night, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time, which is Bronx time, and every single Sunday morning, bright and early, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time, the show reruns. You can go on idobe.com and listen to every single episode that's up there for free. You can go on the podcast app, subscribe for free, and download everything for the hours and hours of stuff we have. By the time this episode airs, we're going to be, I think, in the 110s, which is pretty freaking cool. So, Taylor, thank you so much for doing this.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it, dude.
It was my pleasure, and have a good evening.
You too. Keep on rocking.
Woo!